Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the President's challenge to House Speaker Boehner to allow a vote to end the government shutdown and the surreal spectacle of a Republican congressman blaming a park ranger for the government closure. An expert on campaigns, elections, and political advertising, Lynn Vavrick, a professor of political science at UCLA and co-author of the new book, The Gamble, Choice and Chance in the 2012 election, joins us to discuss the tyranny of the minority as the Tea Party holds the nation hostage while threatening to tank the economy. Then we will speak with Graham Fuller, the former vice chairman of the National Intelligence Council at the CIA, about his article at Global Viewpoint, "Has Obama Inadvertently Broken the Mold in U.S. Foreign Policy?" We will discuss the unraveling of American exceptionalism, American unilateralism, America as the world policeman, and America as the architect of world order, as Obama backs away from the brink of a new war with Syria and opens up a dialogue with Iran. Then finally, we'll be joined in the studio by Steve Scroven, who is the host of Stand Up for Main Street, a political comedy benefit for Public Citizen, and comedian Mark Maron of the top-rated comedy podcast on iTunes, WTF with Mark Maron. And he's the author of the new memoir, Attempting Normal. We will discuss their new comedy special, Stand Up for Main Street, a political comedy benefit for Public Citizen, and the inadvertent comedy in the tragedy underway on Capitol Hill. And joining us now is Lynn Vavrick, who is a professor of political science and communication studies at the University of California in Los Angeles. Her research focuses on campaigns, elections, and political advertising. She is the author of Campaign Reform, Insights and Evidence, The Message Matters, The Economy and Presidential Campaigns, and is the co-author of The Logic of American Politics. Her latest book, just out, co-authored with John Sides, is The Gamble, Choice and Chance in the 2012 Election. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lynn Vavrick.
Thank you.
And at this point, it's uncertain as to whether John Boehner is getting a little wobbly here. Obviously, he's under a lot of pressure. The president called him out today and basically asked for an up or down vote, including the Democrats, of course. And apparently, the votes are there with the Democrats and the wavering Republicans. What do you think is likely to happen here in this standoff? Because my understanding is that they really want to hold on, the Republicans, until the October 17th deadline with the debt limit and use that as leverage. But I get the impression that the wheels are coming off.
Well, I think this is actually a rare moment in politics where I think citizens and voters have a lot of leverage right now. And so I suspect that what is likely to happen is, with each passing day, more and more people are going to become aware of what's happening, are going to form opinions about it, and contact their congressional offices. Little by little, word is going to get back to members of Congress that their constituents are not pleased with what's happening. And when that really starts to happen, when they sense that in the district they are paying costs for their behavior in the chamber, I think that's when you're really going to see things starting to change. Typically, I would say people don't pay enough attention to politics to make this kind of change happen, even in an election. But this is the kind of thing that touches people's lives in very strange ways that, you know, we don't necessarily think of. The fact that you've planned a vacation that you're not able to take. And so I think that there is this opportunity for people to play the pivotal role.
Well, apparently, if this is an anecdotal evidence here of the public weighing in, Congressman Randy Neugenbauer, a Republican of Texas, confronted a park ranger at the World War II Memorial, which is closed, and they were letting a group of veterans in, and he blamed her for the closure, which he, in fact, had voted for, and told her that she should be ashamed of herself. And the public weighed in. A crowd of onlookers got involved and loudly demanded that the congressman lay off the park ranger, and basically telling him that he was the problem, not her.
Yeah, it's an interesting exchange, because you see in this moment where a veteran says to the congressman, you know, I'm a veteran, I served for X number of years, and she's just doing her job. You know, you're the person. The congressman says to the park ranger, you should be ashamed of yourself. And so this veteran then weighs in and says to the congressman, well, you should be ashamed of yourself. And in that moment, the member of Congress still tries to politicize it. You know, well, it's, you know, the veteran says, you know, I'm unemployed and I can't get a job, you know, and the politics comes out, and the congressman says, that's because of Harry Reid. And this idea that we're always in that partisan political mode, I think that's another thing that if you look at the polling results, slowly but surely, the average, you know, citizen is getting a little bit tired of that kind of partisan vitriol.
So do you think that the Republicans can hang on until the 17th? I mean, today, Speaker Boehner signaled that, not publicly, but privately signaled that he doesn't want to go over the cliff and put the full faith and credit of the United States at risk. So I assume that he's giving up his major leverage here. So is this thing going to go on until the October 17 deadline?
I think if we had any idea of what the answer to that question was, you know, it'd be great. But I think really there's so much uncertainty about everyone's incentives here, what everyone's end goals are, that I think it's really hard to know. And I think we can say a couple of things with more certainty. And one is that, you know, if people in communities around the country start to contact their members, particularly Republican members of Congress, and say, you know, resolve this, or, you know, there'll be consequences at the ballot box, not in the primary, in the general election, right? So as they start to hear from people, I think that's a sure way that there is some softening. The second thing is that, you know, if Boehner decides to exercise his leadership role in terms of agenda control, that would be another way that things would start to change. Now, he is sort of indicating that that's what he's going to do. But again, the past is the best predictor of the future. And I'm not sure that if you were a betting person, you would bet a lot of money on the fact that he's going to do that or do what he says he's going to do there.
Again, I'm speaking with Lynn Vavreck, who's a professor of political science and communication study at the University of California in Los Angeles. Her research focuses on campaigns, elections, and political advertising, and she's the author of Campaign Reform, Insights and Evidence, The Message Matters, The Economy and Presidential Campaigns, and is the co-author of The Logic of American Politics. Her latest book just out, co-authored with John Sides, is The Gamble, Choice and Chance in the 2012 Election. But, of course, what's happening now is in sort of defiance, as if the 2012 election didn't happen. Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, as it's correctly known as, was voted on, and the Supreme Court upheld it. And the Republicans are trying to relitigate something that's already law. So I don't understand. Is this – maybe you're more of a historian than I am, but I don't know that this is how you do business – hold the full faith and credit of the United States hostage on an argument that you've already lost.
It is an unusual situation for sure. And, you know, one of the things that we talk about in The Gamble is this idea that after every presidential election, the side that wins views or interprets the election result as the public speaking, that there's a mandate for the policies that their particular side was advocating. And, you know, we go through a couple of examples demonstrating that that's always the wrong thing to believe, that very few elections are indications of wholesale mandates for the winning party's policies. And so I think that while you're right, this particular action is unusual, it's also important to remember that, you know, this was an election that was, you know, the margin was not as great as it was in 2008. Mostly that's because of the economy coming back slowly. But still, among every group in the population, the share of Obama vote went down. Among almost every group, Latinos and Asians, the vote share went up a little bit. But, you know, people are not feeling as great about President Obama as they were even, you know, 6 years ago. So the interpretation of the election result as being, you know, a validation of his policies or his first term, I think, was always misguided.
You mean he won handily. He had a tremendous victory in the Electoral College, and I don't think most presidents don't do as well second time around. I can't think of anybody that's done better the second time around. Perhaps Roosevelt did. But are you saying that he somehow didn't win or doesn't have that legitimacy of having won the second election, I think fairly handily, certainly in terms of the Electoral College? Because, you know, the Republicans met after the election at Williamsburg, and that's when they made this decision not to negotiate with the White House and not to negotiate with the Senate and to force the Democrats to come to them. Didn't get a lot of press on the liberal press, but it got a lot of press on the conservative press. We have reached the culmination of that strategy. So what seems to have happened is that the Republicans decided that somehow the results of the 2012 elections were invalid.
I think that, you know, obviously we don't make the argument in the book that, you know, Obama didn't win the election. It's the interpretation of what winning means. And winners almost always interpret their victory to mean a wholesale mandate for the policies, their policies, over the policies of the other party. And that's almost always hubris. In the same way that when people look back at the election and they say, why did the winner win? Most often people want, oh, because his campaign was better. And so, you know, you'd say Romney lost because he didn't run his campaign, you know, his ground game didn't function as well as Obama's. Like, these are all the conventional arguments that you get. But, you know, the winner doesn't have to have won the better campaign. Sometimes things like the state of the economy, there's a lot of fundamental conditions that affect how these campaigns are played out, just, you know, not because of the decisions the candidates make, but just because of chance circumstances. And so this is another one of these kind of things that happens all the time. The party that wins thinks there's support for their policies. And that's not always the case.
Well, but if it's not the case, then how do you justify the losers in this case? Not that the Republicans lost the House, but the reason that they decided to have this no negotiating stance following their election defeat, and obviously Romney thought he'd won, at least his wife did. So they were, I think, somewhat surprised by the results. And shortly thereafter, meeting at Williamsburg, they decided to basically not to play ball, to basically be hard-nosed. And it would seem in part to do with the fact that there's been so much gerrymandering going on that there are enough of these safe seats that they can basically play to their gallery and forget the National Gallery. Because, after all, the Democrats got, I think, over a million more votes in the House than the Republicans did. That gives you an example of how gerrymandered it is.
And I think that this is, again, where it comes back to this point about constituencies in these districts all over the country. And so the longer this goes on, because I think everybody recognizes that this is not how progress is made in politics. And so the longer this goes on, particularly with the stakes getting higher each day, people, I think, around the country are going to start to voice their concerns about the strategy. And that's, I think, going to be the nudge that really causes things to change.
But it would seem to me that there's a difference here between basically playing hardball and going on strike. And it seems that the Republicans have upped the ante, because all of this shutdown is over, trying to relitigate something that's already passed. So they're absolutely refusing to budge on anything in the present, but then they're going back to the past to try and relitigate Obamacare. I mean, to me, that's obstruction twofold. I mean,
and I think it's actually even slightly more complicated than that, because then now the argument that they're advancing, that, you know, you can see very clearly being articulated in the incident you talked about at the World War II memorial, that the Republican congressman then tries to suggest that, you know, it's the Democrats who won't compromise, who won't have a conversation with his side about resolving this. So it's even slightly more complicated than just saying, we don't like this thing that is the law of the land. It then is an extra layer. And because of that, because the other side won't talk about this thing that is the law of the land, they are the people who won't compromise. And for me, thinking about the average person in the population, that additional layer, it gets quite complicated for people at that point, which is, again, why I think the position is untenable. They will not be able to change people's minds about this who aren't already with them. And so at some point, people will start to get very angry.
But in terms of this sudden about-face, where now they're saying that we're the reasonable ones and the Democrats won't talk to us, mm-hmm. the strategy up until now has been the reverse. You know, Patty Murray's been trying to get them to talk to her forever, and they simply have refused to negotiate. And now all of a sudden they're saying that they're the ones who want to negotiate, but they want to negotiate over something that's already been voted on and approved by the Supreme Court. So I find it sort of surreal. I mean, if there are enough people out there that believe it, maybe they can get away with it. But doesn't it come down to a simple reality here where if people are paying attention to what's happening, it's pretty clear, without being partisan, who's at fault here?
I think a lot of the partisanship is exactly the way to understand the rhetoric that is happening here. And a lot of this is to give people who are supporters already the necessary tools to have conversations with other people about what's happening. So they have to go out there and say, you know, we're willing to have conversations, and the other side isn't, you know, even though that's sort of not what the reality has been leading up to this. But the fact that, you know, they can say that out loud now, that, you know, tells their supporters what to say to other people in communities around the country. Now, that's a very different thing from whether that argument is persuading anybody. And, you know, I have not seen any polling data on this because it would be very hard to do this kind of polling in real time. But I'd be willing to bet a lot of money that argument actually, it has not changed any minds. You know, this is not the kind of argumentation that is going to be persuasive for people who don't have an opinion. It's for people who are already on their side.
Well, Lynn Vavreck, I thank you so much for joining us, and we really haven't had a chance to talk about The Gamble, your new book, which we'll have to revisit later, because obviously things are pretty, shall we say, interesting at the moment.
Exactly.
I thank you for joining us.
You're welcome.
Again, I've been speaking with Lynn Vavreck, who's a professor of political science and communication study at the University of California in Los Angeles. Her research focuses on campaigns, elections, and political advertising, and she's the author of Campaign Reform, Insights and Evidence, The Message Matters, The Economy, and Presidential Campaigns, and is the co-author of The Logic of American Politics. Her latest book, just out, co-authored with John Sides, is The Gamble, Choice and Chance in the 2012 Election. We're going to take a brief station break. We're back talking about whether Obama has inadvertently broken the mold in U.S. foreign policy. You can't.